Hey, you know how Black Friday sales are the best savings of the year? Well, what if we told you Wayfair's bringing Black Friday to July? That's right. Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is Black Friday in July. And it's on its way. Starting July 24th, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, way more doorbuster deals on top products and 24-hour surprise flash deals. Oh, and did we mention free shipping on everything? Everything. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer and the best time to make your home even more you. But it only lasts 5 days, so don't miss out. Mark your calendars, then head to Wayfair for up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the summer. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale, July 24th through 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, and welcome aboard the Talkin' Texans podcast, episode 10. I am Paul Gallant. You can hear me on the Paul Gallant Show weekdays from 10 to noon on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. He is DJ Bien-Aimé, a fancy set of sunglasses with him, excuse me, bifocals. Those are the bifocals. Those aren't the sunglasses. He is the Houston Texans beat reporter for ESPN. DJ, what's going on, buddy?
Man, I'm trying to fix my glasses because, like, it's look a little crooked.
You look like a professor. It doesn't matter if they're crooked. You look like you have so much more wisdom than me.
You don't see it how, like, it's like it's kind of something. It's kind of crooked just a little bit.
Are you obsessive compulsive? Are we learning new things about you?
Nah, not really. That's my dad. But me, like, if I notice something, I may want to get it fixed. May not want it. It depends how much it costs.
That's the big key.
Yeah. So that's that. You feel me? So
nothing wrong with a little vanity in life. Anyway, we're still far away from Houston Texans training camp. We actually were given the schedule of the practices that will be open to the public July 28th. So exactly a month from when we're recording this on June 28th. Another one Sunday, July 30th, August 4th, 5th, 8th, 16th, and 17th. If you want to go out to those practices, I do think that those are actually better than going to preseason games. But since we are in the heat of not just Houston, of the NFL offseason, let's answer, DJ, one of the questions that would probably be also introduced if the Houston Texans were the most popular team in America on one of those Speak for Your Pizza First Take shows. Can CJ Stroud be NFL Rookie of the Year? What do you think?
So when you texted me this question, by definition, can? Of course he can. Will he? That's debatable, right? And, you know, I went through some stats and things of that nature. Just starting off, so this, to start this conversation, since 2010 to now, the quarterbacks that have won Rookie of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year, this is the average stats that they have. I have it right here.
Ooh, let's hear it.
Total QBR is 62. Completion percentage, 64. TD per yards per attempt, 7.3. Passing touchdowns, 22. Interceptions, 11. And most important, passing yards, 3,748.
Okay.
So that's the bar for every guy that has won it. So that's where CJ would have to be in that range. The win count, just depends. Because, again, Kyler Murray won Rookie of the Year. Just Herbert won Rookie of the Year. Their teams, but Kyler Murray, I think his team only had like 5 wins that year. So, but, you know, you have Dak Prescott, who obviously went 13-3 his rookie year.
On a very good team.
A very good team. You have Cam Newton, who basically, you know, they went 7-9 that year, but he showed off rip. He was special. So it's really just going to come down to can you, one, get to those numbers? Because that's the key. So where I'm like, is because most of those guys, right? So I'm going to go through every single quarterback that won Rookie of the Year since 2010. Sam Bradford, Cam Newton, Robert Griffin III, Dak Prescott, Kyler Murray, Justin Herbert. So I would say at least four of those six guys had a legitimate number one wide receiver, right? Remember, had two, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. Kyler Murray, he had an older Larry Fitzgerald, so I don't know if you want to throw him in there or not. I would lean towards not, because Larry was on the out. He was way out past his prime, but he had legs. He was dynamic with his legs. Dak Prescott had Dez Bryant and Jason Witten and had the best offensive line in football, basically the best running back in football. So that made his life a lot easier. Robert Griffin III, Pierre Garçon was, I think he finished like with 1,500 yards receiving that year. It was, like, he had like an incredible year. I don't think he made the Pro Bowl, which is kind of crazy, but he had an incredible year. If I'm wrong, somebody can fact check that on me. But he had a receiver that could basically go for 1,000 yards, which is what you need. And Cam had Steve Smith, even though Steve Smith was on the back end, but Steve Smith was still Steve Smith, right? And then Sam Bradford, I don't know who he's the more, to be honest. But that's basically the point. With recent trends, you need that top-tier guy, or at least a guy that defensive coordinators, they walk into the film room, this is a guy we have to focus our coverage to. This is who we have to bracket. This is who we have to try to take away from their quarterback. That's what's going to make, for me, kind of determine if CJ has a legitimate shot at winning Rookie of the Year. Is it Ken Nico or Robert Woods? Those are my two main guys that I feel like could, you know, be that perimeter top-tier threat, for real, for real. Those two guys. Can they off-rip make CJ's life much easier so he can have those freebies? You know what I'm saying? Because I remember Justin Herbert's rookie year, there are a plethora of times where he could just throw it to, you know, he knew Keenan Allen was going to be open, he could throw it to him. Or Mike Williams, just throw that moon ball, and Mike Williams going to come down with it. Even Baker Mayfield, the year, his best statistical year, his most efficient year was the year with the playoffs, but his best statistical year, he had Jarvis Landry, who at that point, I believe, was a five-time Pro Bowler and was consistently a 1,000-yard receiver, and he had proven I could be a number one receiver on an offense. So that also helped. So I know that's the end of my soliloquy. It really comes down to, can Nico and Robert Woods prove out the gate I can be a dynamic playmaker for CJ? That's how we'll know if CJ can truly be a contender for Rookie of the Year.
You got to have help. Now, to go back to that 2010 Rams season that you just mentioned, DJ, Sam Bradford's leading receiver, can you guess how many yards that he had? I was actually shocked by this because I just looked it up as you were wrapping that point
up. Who was it?
Who was his leading receiver in 2010? Danny Amendola with 85 catches for
660-something yards.
689. That's insane. Yep. That is nuts. Now, Amendola made a lot of highlight plays there.
Right.
And he was a guy that came on as the season progressed. But Bradford also had Steven Jackson in the backfield. Right. And Steven Jackson that season had 1,241 rushing yards, and he had 46 catches as well. So basically, they need help to win Rookie of the Year. And it's not just about, did you play well?
Right.
It's about the statistics and winning. Because that 2010 Rams team was a 7-9 team. You're going to have to win, I would say, close to 500% of the games. So, short answer of the question that I asked you, DJ, I would say no. The odds are against it.
Right.
For the reasons you brought up, right. I didn't add that the interior of the offensive line for the Texans, there are some questions. Shaq Mason, I like that they brought him in. Not so sure about the extension. He is coming off the worst season of his career per Pro Football Focus, for what it's worth. That website is, I would say, a useful guide. It's not the end-all, be-all. Juice Scruggs is a center that's a rookie, best-case scenario. Kenyon Green, who the hell knows what's going to happen with him given the knee injury. The things you mentioned, we have no idea who the number one wide receiver is going to be, if any of them are even number one caliber,
right.
A matchup problem, or even a threat. We also know they are going to run it a lot. But let's look at it from this perspective. Stroud is going to be competing against Bryce Young in Carolina,
right.
Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis.
Right.
I think that in Carolina, it is a slightly better situation, but they did just trade away DJ Moore as part of that trade to move up to the number one overall pick. And with Anthony Richardson, I think the offensive line is still pretty good. Jonathan Taylor, really good running back. And we know that Richardson is willing to run young Stroud, at least for the most part, not so much. So if I'm picking between those three, I had to pick one of those quarterbacks. Richardson seems to make the most sense right now. But I think the good news is for Stroud, DJ, as I wrap up this very long-winded point, at wide receiver, it seems like this year there's no one that is far ahead of the other rookies coming out. And it does feel like every single year there's one rookie who's going to blow up. It's a Justin Jefferson, it's a Jamar Chase or something like that. At the very least, it seems like right now, Stroud's going to be competing against a couple of quarterbacks. And it's just one of those three who is likely going to get the award.
I think you forgot somebody.
Who that?
B.J. Robinson.
Bijan Robinson, you're right.
Yeah. He's Atlanta. The favorite to win it by a landslide. Like, he's a favorite for sure because, again, like as you mentioned, like most of those guys don't have a premier number one wide receiver to be able to put the just the pure numbers that's going to require to win Rookie of the Year. Even the year with Baker, he played at a very high, a very good level that his rookie year. Saquon got it because Saquon, went, I think, went for like 2,000 yards from scrimmage. Yeah, yeah, like Saquon went crazy that first year. So that's the reason why he didn't get it. And I think Bijan could do something not similar to that, because that's a high bar. But I wouldn't be shocked if he did. Like, he's like a can't-miss guy, you know, or the kid out of Detroit, Gibbs, because he's also going to a run-friendly offense with a very, very, very good offensive line. So, yeah, nah, Caesar's going to have some legitimate competition. So, yeah, can he win it? Of course he can, but he's going to – if he wins it, they have a friend. They know they have a franchise guy. If he wins it, going against the guys that he's going against, paired with the fact that kind of looking at Bill Barnyard's ESPN ranking for weapons, the Texans ranked at the bottom. They're 32nd. So if he can still win Rookie of the Year, where they have a projected bottom tier weapons core, because they you know they include receivers, tight ends, running backs. Obviously, their running back room is a lot better than
pretty good.
It's pretty good, you know. Devin Singletary and Damian Pierce. That's a really, really good 1-2 punch. I would be hard pressed for someone to find me a better, at least 2 to 3 better 1-2 punches in the NFL. Obviously, Atlanta's that's up there. Atlanta's is probably like top whatever. Maybe Miami if they get Dalvin Cook, but you'd be hard pressed for me to find. Maybe obviously the 49ers. So the Texans running back room is you know top 5 in my opinion.
You mentioned the Falcons a second ago, too. Just a really quick point. Yeah, that actually might help out C.J. Stroud because Cordarrelle Patterson and Tyler Allgeier, along with Bijan Robinson, maybe Robinson has less touches. Maybe the statistics are down a little bit.
Well, he was drafted in the top 10. One thing about coaches, GMs, all that, when they take a player that high, they're going to make sure they feature them so they can look smart. So I know you mentioned those other two guys. Hey, they're going to spend a lot of time watching. They're going to spend a lot of time watching. You know what I'm saying? And think about it. They took Bijan the top 8. Took 8 overall. Yeah, nah. They're going to make sure they get their money's worth at that position because they know they're going to get crushed. They're going to still get crushed from time to time. With, you took a running back in the top 10. How could you do that? Analytics. Da, 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 all that. So, like, they're going to, like, feature him. So, he's going to – like the over under should be like, is he going to get 1600 yards of scrimmage yards, you know, which I would bet the over comfortably. But back to your point, I could see there is the other side of the coin where, you know, those two other guys you mentioned take snaps and reps away from Bijan, which gives CJ a better shot.
It's possible for Stroud to win it. We're both in agreement there. I'm always of the mindset too that if you draft the quarterback, he probably isn't the guy. And Stroud might be. We still have to see. I think right now, any opinion that somebody has is based in optimism if you think he's going to be good or pessimism if you think he's going to be bad. I just like to look at it from this way, DJ. Please surprise me. You're probably not going to. I'm not going to hold it against you if you don't. It's a really difficult position to play, and guys are thrust into difficult situations almost right away when they join the league all the time. I don't think that's necessarily a problem. It's just hard.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, as you made a really good point, like, you know, right now everybody has confirmation bias. So it's like, if I think he's going to be really good, then like if I get one training camp report of CJ Stroud went 18 for 20, threw two touchdowns in practice, she's going to have the person like, oh, see, I told you. Boy, CJ going to be cold this year, man. I'm trying to tell you. Or it is a practice of CJ just threw two interceptions. That's a mistake. See, I told you. Wasn't going to be that good. Overrated, overdrafted. But I've come to learn, like, you just kind of got to let this play out. Like I don't really see the inherent benefit of staking, you know, planting your flag with a take on quarterbacks coming out in the draft, because we've seen so many times now a lot of guys do not pan out. Like most guys drafted in the first round don't pan out, like, for the most part. Like, you know, you have 2020, which was, to this day, like, I think it's going to go down the greatest quarterback class ever. I think it could have surpassed the Marino, Jim Kelly, and Elway class. But, yeah, the 2021 class that had four quarterbacks going to top 11, I think. And right now, only one of them is guaranteed to be a starter in 2024. One is already on the bench. The other one can't, right now, according to reports, can't beat out Sam Darnold. And then you have Justin Fields, who's flashed, but we'll see. Again, he has to still prove it. So, yeah, like, I don't really. And then 2022, you have Kenny Pickett. Okay. And then 2019, you got Daniel Jones, I think, Dwayne Haskins, and what's his name? Daniel Jones and Kyler Murray. I mean,
yeah.
One of those guys is a Pro Bowler, you know, to RIP to Dwayne Haskins. And then Daniel Jones is, you know what I mean? And then
not money, but right.
Right. In 2016, both quarterbacks drafted in the top two got traded. I think Goff is good now, but Carson's out the league now. So, you know, like, there's no
Bears in Alaska.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So for me, it's like, we just got to see. You know what I mean? Like, it's been proven time and time and time again. We really don't know. Like, we really do not know. Because if you redo the 2022 class, some people would take Justin Herbert number one, then Joe Burrow will go number two, and then Jalen Hurts will go up before Tua. But Jalen Hurts went second round, you know what I'm saying? And Tua went before Justin Herbert, you know what I mean? And some people think Justin Herbert is the best quarterback out of that entire class. So it just – sometimes you just got to kind of let – 2018. I mean, only two out of the five quarterbacks drafted in the first round could play. Legitimately play. Like, Rosen is out the NFL. Sam Darnold is on, like, what, his third team? And Baker is on, what, his fourth team? You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, right. You got Lamar, you got Josh Allen, but it's rare. You know what's funny? It's rare you get the middle, where it's like, is that really good? Or they just – then you go, you know, hold a clipboard.
It's tricky. You're drafting with the hope that they're going to be the guy, and I think now teams, because of the guys that you just listed, DJ, they're willing to move on from guys a little bit more quickly as opposed to giving a guy – way too much time. Here's what CJ Stroud needs to do. He just needs to not have a basketball comparison, Victor Wembanyama moment. Like Victor Wembanyama, before the start of the year, we saw his first practice. It was a photo shoot for the Spurs. He just missed every shot he took. CJ just needs to not do that. So Texans PR, protect your guy. We've had a couple of funny offseason moments where quarterbacks have just gotten absolutely destroyed because their own team video company messed it up. Remember, Tua Tagovailoa is underthrowing Tyreek Hill.
Oh my God.
He's going to be terrible this year.
That was crazy. That thing got like 8 million views on Twitter. It did.
And he had a good year. The concussions were the big problem, not underthrowing the football. So that's all we're going to have to go off of. And I'm just hoping that we don't have any bad, virally bad moments out of CJ Stroud. I think there was a Zach Wilson one too, obviously you're more familiar with him than I am. Yeah. I forget what it was. Like, he threw an interception.
It was like his love life off the field with his mother's friends.
Oh, well, there's that too. Yes. Yeah. But he got that dog in him. But I think he threw like an interception on the sideline through like a defense. Like, it was right. I don't know. It was one of those ones that was caught on tape. And one tweet made it seem like Zach Wilson was just a complete buffoon under center, which is unfair. But we're going to be there until probably the first month of the year. It's a very difficult time of season to navigate through.
So let me ask you this. So what would be for you, forget rookie offensive rookie year. Let's forget that. What would a successful rookie year look like from a statistical standpoint, from an eye test standpoint? I don't care about wins. It's year one. You know, if you live in the playoffs, great, but I don't really – one quarter wins is and isn't a quarterback stat, but for rookies, it isn't for me. So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, the stat that you mentioned that you can look at, I think is the biggest one that still holds true, because it seems like the interception numbers are declining every single year for quarterbacks, and the touchdown numbers, the yards are obviously increasing just because there's more games. Yards per attempt.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yards per attempt tells me that this guy is trying to push the football down the field. And if you take a look at seasons, the last couple of years in particular, the, I guess what we're looking for is like the median as far as yards per attempt. I would like to see a quarterback that is above that, because we hear very often that CJ Stroud has accuracy. Okay, that's really cool to hear, but what is his yards gained per passing attempt? You take a look at the guy who was the top in the NFL last year. It was Tua Tagovailoa, 8.9 yards per attempt. And as you go down, 7 is the number that seems to be the middle of the pack. So I'm looking for north of 7. If it's lower than that, I'm going to have some questions. And some of the guys who were lower than that last year, do you feel great about Daniel Jones or Mac Jones going forward? Justin Herbert's actually in that conversation as well. That might be a Joe Lombardi thing. It does seem to be a thing that's happened every single offense that Joe Lombardi's been an offensive coordinator with, specifically with Matt Stafford, but also with Herbert. The yards per attempt have been really down. I'm looking for north of 7. And I think that would be a really good barometer for how CJ Stroud plays this season and just how I think comfortable, confident he is in pushing the football down the field, especially after being at Ohio State where all of his guys were always wide open. He's played with such great wide receivers.
Right. Now, you know, that's a really, really good point. That's a really good point. I'm right now, I'm actually like pulling up one of my articles. When you mentioned yards per attempt, I'm pulling up one of my articles that I wrote for the New York Daily News. And I remember like writing about yards per attempt and listing it up with like, you know, first round quarterback since 2010. I remember Zach was averaging like under 180 yards per game. And I remember like looking at like a bunch of quarterbacks since, you know, first round. I could have been 32 since 2010 at that point, up until 2021, going into 2022, January, whatever. And like his stats were comparable with guys like Mitchell Trubisky, Blaine Gabbert, Josh Rosen, Christian Ponders, you know what I'm saying? Dwayne Haskins, even you could throw Tua in there, you could throw Jared Goff in there, where like you're like, you know, Josh Allen was also in there, but Josh Allen had supreme physical ability, where so you could be like, okay, maybe you could be a little more patient with that. But you're right, like yards per attempt, yard passing yards per game, all that truly does matter. Cause like, are you trying to push the ball down the field? Are you trying to create dynamic plays, big plays, and things of that nature?
Right. And yards per game, though, can be tricky because we do see a lot of garbage time heroes who pile up a ton of yards at the end of a game when his team is down big, right? So that is one that you have to be careful about. That's why I go to the yards attempt.
Yeah. You're right. You're very right about that, because that can be tricky. But I'm a big proponent of – I've seen guys trailing big try to put up stats, and they can't. And I've seen guys that trailing big put up stats. And most of the guys that can still put up stats while trailing big – are usually aren't bums. Like, you still have to make really pros ones. And still, you know. Yeah. So, but I do feel what you're saying, because a lot of Davis Mills rookie year stats were generated by garbage time stats, you know, so when they're down by like a lot and then he throws for a bunch of yards in the fourth quarter and then boom, like you look up and, oh, okay, that's not a bad game. Just looking at the box score. So, yeah, you're right. So, yards per attempt, more than anything, because you don't want a gunshot quarterback. Because if your quarterback is gunshot, then good luck.
Yeah, that's it.
But, you know, for me, passing yards, yards per attempt, that matters. I think for me, as long as he's around, I'm trying to do the math, Because if you add 200 per game, that's 3,400 for the season. So I would prefer him to be in that 36 to 37 range. 36, 37, maybe 38 range. Touchdowns over 20. You know, because that means you're averaging over, you know, averaging one per game. That's respectable. Because he's going to have some games where he throws two or three. He's got some games throw zero. But if you're averaging for the entire season one, I'm good with that. A little bit over, you know, the one, I'm good with that. So for me, it's probably 64 completion percentage. Because that's something that you got the ability to complete passes or you don't. So if you're like in the low 50s and you don't have athletic running ability, then we have a big, massive issue.
Oh, yeah.
But as long as CJ's in like 63, 64 as a rookie, can hit over, say, 36, 3,700 yards passing, over 20 touchdowns, you're very, very comfortable with that. Like, you're super comfortable with that going into year two, knowing that he did that with, you know, coming into the season, question marks at the receiver spot, and he was still able to produce at a relatively middle of the pack across the NFL level as a rookie. So you can expect, once you add that legitimate top flight receiver to pair with Robert Woods and Nico Collins and John Metchie and Tank Dale, now we're looking at 4,500 yards in year two, or 41 with like 28 touchdowns, you know?
We'll see how it all ends up. You mentioned something a moment ago that's going to help us transition into our next topic and things you don't want to see. Steven Nelson doesn't want to see no vest. He posted a picture of a vest on his Instagram story. His at is Steven Nelson 20, late on Tuesday night. There's a picture of a vest with the caption, "Can't trust a MF, mother bleeper, that wear these for every day of the week, clown freak." Now, there's rhyming at the end, DJ, and I'm dumb when it comes to rap. So for all I know, this is like Deshaun Watson tweeting rap lyrics back in the day. I don't know. What I do know is that there is a bit of drama going on between Steven Nelson and the Houston Texans over a potential contract negotiation. He played well last year. He's the 40th highest paid corner in the NFL. From what I heard, he wants 2 for 16 and was under the impression, based off of his reception from D'Amico Ryans, from Nick Caserio, that there would be a new deal sooner rather than later. Clearly, that has not happened yet. And it has me wondering about Steven Nelson and perhaps his future with the team, because this is not the best way to go about it, insulting the fashion choices of your general manager, however questionable they may be. Because again, Nick, it's 100 degrees outside. and you've been wearing a lot of vests this year.
So what do you think? What do you think about the situation?
Well, I have wondered about this, DJ, because you take a look at the Texans cap situation. Who are guys that could potentially be surprise cuts for the team during training camp? And I know we talked about this a little bit before. Christian Kirksey would save them a lot of money. Would they move on from him? But I remember you made a good point of, hey, like, they don't have a lot of linebacker depth right now. Okay, fair enough. But Steven Nelson, at a position that the Texans do have a lot of depth, should they move on from him, it would save them almost $4 million. And in a room that features Derek Stingley, Desmond King, who also played pretty well last year, Shaquille Griffin, who the last time he was in a defense like this played very well, though maybe he's not 100%, and Tavier Thomas, I do wonder, DJ, about whether or not Steven Nelson is perhaps making his job more difficult to stay here with the Texans and to get that extension that he thinks he is worth.
So I think my first point, I think he's trolling. I don't think he's taking a shot at Steve. So I know Steven well enough to know that Steven is direct. Like, Steven is 150% like alpha. Like, there's no passive aggressiveness to him.
Okay.
Zero. Yeah, like none. Like, I remember one time, you know, it was after the Denver Broncos game. Yeah, it's right after Derek Stingley spoke. That presser lasted like 60 seconds. It was a scrum or whatever. And Jonathan and I, we go up to Steven. Jonathan's asking a long enough question about Derek to where Steven interrupts Jonathan is like, hey, man, I'm not in the business of talking about other players. Like, cuts him off. Like, it kind of flustered Jonathan just a tad bit because he wasn't trying to ask him in a way that was going to make him say something bad about Derek. He was more asking, like, when the young guy is in a second start, you know, what type of, I guess, advice can you give to him after a game like this, where Steve, you know, Stingley had some high moments, you know, in the end zone, PBU, force a PBU, wide guard and Sutton. He has a couple of defensive pass interferences, gave up a 34-yard deep pass. But in man coverage that game, I remember I looked it up. In man coverage, he was targeted six times, gave up three catches for 61 yards, two PBUs. That's a solid game. But Steven was like, nah, don't. I'm out of business of talking about players, bro. Like, he cut him off midway through the question. He was able to eventually ask him, like, rephrase his question, finished it, and he answered it. But I'm just saying, like, Steven is pretty direct. Like Steven isn't going to play the whole sub-tweeting and, like, putting out messages, that passive-aggressive stuff. Like, he's going to say it with his chest. Like, if you just look at his TL, look at some of his tweets, you would know that, oh, nah, this is a man that does not.
So he's a good follow.
He's a good follow for sure. But he's a man that isn't going to tap, dance around. He's going to let you know exactly how he feels and where he stands, period. You know what I'm saying? Like that's that. So that's why I think it's more trolling than anything.
Okay.
I don't necessarily think that it was a shot that at Nick Casario, but I can see how people could interpret it as that. I'm just saying, from the Steven Nelson that I know, he isn't going to be passive aggressive with that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he's not going to be passive aggressive.
Okay.
You know? So, and yeah, okay. And yeah, like, most times, like, football players, when they want stuff done, they kind of got to be a little bit more direct anyway. It's not like in the NBA where you can see all the passive aggressive stuff. In football, since there's, like, you know, you kind of got to, like, let them know where you stand off the rip. You know what I'm saying? Like, no matter how good, average, or below average you are, most times, like, they'll let people know where they stand across the board. How many times we see when a player wants a contract, if they're going to use social media, they're very direct. They're not going to be like, you know, I hope somebody, you know, remember that one time where, like, LeBron tweeted out, maybe it's
that
just
one
me.
Time?
That one time, like, maybe it's just me, when, like, the Lakers didn't make a trade for somebody that he wanted, and they didn't make a trade, but he was like, maybe it's me. Nah, most players don't move like that. They're pretty straightforward. You know what I'm saying? Like, remember when Brandon Cooks wanted his trade, right? And he didn't get it. He went right to Twitter and said, you're playing with my career. You're telling lies. This isn't that. You know what I'm saying? Like, remember when Deshaun wanted out before all the other stuff popped up afterwards? He was like, I'm now on a 10. Like, he made that known. So most football players, cause, you know, it's more of a, you know, machacho, alpha male type sport. So, like, guys aren't inclined to tap dance or tip around letting their feelings be known if they're going to go public. Usually going to be, you know, pretty straightforward. So that's my stance on Steve. Okay. I think he's just trolling. And that's kind of that. But, you know, if he's released recently, soon because of that, then I won't be shocked. Not saying that he's going to be released for that. I'm just saying I wouldn't be shocked because I can easily see how somebody else could see that and be like, yo, what you got going on? You know what I'm saying? And kind of go from there.
Nelson, at the very least, I know, does have a good wardrobe. So this also just could be him being Regina George from Mean Girls and saying, wear a vest.
Hey, that's a really good movie, though.
It is a great movie.
It's a very
Mean Girls. There's nothing wrong with watching Mean Girls. I've watched that movie far too many times.
I think it's back on Netflix, though. So.
Oh, it's got to be. It's got to be.
All
right. One last topic before we wrap it up. Let's go through the schedule because, again, it's June, and I don't know. The hell else are we going to talk about? We went from weeks 1 through 7, which is the Houston Texans bye week, going through. On October 29th, the schedule picks up. The Texans are on the road to take on the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers are favored by 3. I'm a little bummed out, DJ, that this game did not get the Thursday night treatment because I would like to see CJ Stroud and Bryce Young under the lights. Just your regular afternoon game with Carolina, the 3-point favorite. At this point in the year, I think we're going to have a pretty good feel for both of those teams. Right now, though, we're just speculating. Mm-hmm. A lot of people seem to think Carolina is actually a pretty good operation in spite of last year and with Frank Reich aboard, that things will continue to improve. I feel like if I'm picking win-loss here, though, I don't know. I don't really think much of the Panthers. I think the Texans could win that game.
Yeah, I think they could win that game also. Like, I don't think that I don't think they can win that game. I think that's a game that's it's only a three-point favorite. If you are a three-point favorite at home, that means it's basically a pick 'em. You're only at home. You're only a favorite because you're at home. So if the game was in Houston, the Texans would be the favorite. So that's Vegas letting you know that the rosters are pretty even across the board. Like, there's some spots where actually they're kind of built in similar ways, right? Like,
right.
The Texans have young, promising talent. The D-line, obviously, Burns he's better than anything the Texans have right now. Maybe hopefully Will Anderson can turn into that. Gennard can hopefully stay healthy and build off of the 2021 season. But their secondaries are kind of similar. You know, like, they both got young, up and rising young corners, and one has Joe Horn, the other one has Derek Stingley. They have pretty good safeties. One has Jeremy Chinn, and then, you know, obviously Jalen Petrie. The linebacker unit, you know, has some questions there on both sides. So this goes on and on. And on offense, they both have two bookend tackles, just like the Texans had two bookend tackles. Obviously, I would take the Texans tackle group ahead of theirs. At a running back room, Miles Sanders, Damian Pierce, that's a wash. I would say that the Texans have the edge at tight end. Dalton Schultz over Tommy Temmert. However you pronounce the name. I'm really bad at pronouncing names, but you'll see that. But
just random.
You know, and then at receiver, obviously, the Panthers at the edge. You have Adam Thielen, Terrence Marshall, and DJ Chark. That's better than what the Texans have. That's just
pure doesn't take much.
Yeah, like they have legitimate, like, it's not their room isn't bad. Like, it's nowhere near bad.
Yeah, Thielen was good not that long ago. Like, really good.
Like, that's an average unit, and you can just at that point you just rely on your offensive coordinator Frank Wright, the play caller, to just scheme guys open a lot of times. And I think Frank is more than capable of doing that. So, I think that's gonna be another game that, you know, it's coming into the fourth quarter. But I wish it was on prime time, mainly because how often do we get the number one versus number two pick playing each other? Rarely. And they're both in opposite conferences. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the NFL is known to do that. Like, I remember, I don't think Jameis Winston versus Marcus Mariota was on primetime TV. And Zach versus Trevor in their rookie year wasn't on primetime TV. It was on a regular Sunday. Now, granted, both the Jets and Jags that year, 2021, dumpster fires offensively. So I'm glad the world didn't have to watch that. But I wish that the world could watch this game, mainly because CJ has a lot of hype coming out. Bryce has a lot of hype coming out. The national audience knows more about these guys than they did. They know about Trevor. Most people didn't know about Zach. You know what I'm saying? Like, Zach came out of nowhere, where CJ, Ohio State, Bryce, Bama, both best friends growing up, both from California. You know, I wish we could have got that, but it's all good. You know what I'm saying? But this year, it can be flexed. This year, it can be flexed. And if we look at NFL Week 8, that's Week 8, correct?
Correct. So you think it could?
I think it could, depending on who's the primetime game for that.
Okay.
Hold on. They're showing me. I just found primetime games for last year. I need Week 8 of 2023. But based on who's there, I could see that being switched. Based, you know, just depending on if Bryce and CJ look respectable. I think that was good for the fans and good for everybody just involved, that, you know, if the team is bad, like, why do we need them on prime time? Let's flex them out. So right now, Thursday night, that week, we have Bucks at Bills. So that's a opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then we have, for the Monday night game, Raiders at Lions. Ooh. So I don't think the Raiders are getting moved from that slot, mainly because the Raiders have a large fan base. And then a Sunday night game is Bears at Chargers. And you know the NFL loves Justin Herbert, so Justin Herbert.
They love to force the effing Bears on us.
Yeah. So, and you know they're not, ESPN isn't taking the
probably not.
Yeah, they're not taking Texans versus Panthers. So Thursday night, I could see that happening. And what helps the Texans in the opportunity is they have a bye in Week 7. Mm-hmm. So they have a bye prior to week 8. So I think that plays a big factor to where if you want to flex that, at least you have that bye week to work with that. So yeah. So I could see that. I don't know when the bye week 4 is for the Panthers, but I can pull it up right now. 2023 schedule. I'm about to pull it up right now. I think, and theirs is also week 7 also. So that's a prime candidate for a flex. And okay. I think that's what the NFL did. Basically was like, all right, we're going to not make this a prime time game, but we're going to give them a bye ahead of time that week prior, just in case if these two teams look viable, we take the Bills and Bucks game out and we put the Panthers and Texas game in at week 8, that Thursday night game.
We'll see if they do it. Be interesting to see. This is a very easy stretch, if there is an easy stretch for a team like the Texans, because the next week they take on the Bucks. It's one of the few games that they are favored this coming season. 1-point favorites. I got nothing on the Bucks. Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask, they're winning that game. I think the Texans, this might be a game that they actually win by a significant margin as the Bucks move on from Tom Brady.
Yeah, I can see that. But the Bucks still have a good roster. Did you have a weak quarterback situation? But they got two or more. They got 2,000-yard receivers. They got a pretty good offensive line, or respectable offensive line. The D line is still ferocious. The linebacker core duo of they brought back Levante David, correct?
I believe he's still there, along with Devin White, who seems to have annoyed a lot of people in Tampa Bay over the course of the last couple of seasons after having a really good start to his career. I think there's like this idea that he maybe doesn't put as much effort in as he needs to.
Yeah.
I heard it hinted by Todd Bowles and some other coaches too. You're not sure who he was hinting at, but some people surmise that it was actually Devin White.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they still got a really good linebacker in court. So I don't know if the Bucks are going to fall off the cliff as quick as people are predicting. But then again, they were bad last year, right? I mean, they were
last year until the end of the year, and even then.
So yeah, no, I mean, I could see it both ways where it just completely unravels. So, but I could see the Texans winning that game. At that point, it might be Kyle Trask, and
I know, right?
You know, good luck. So,
well, speaking of good luck, the next game, the Bengals are 9.5-point favorites against the Houston Texans in Cincinnati.
I'm just going to enjoy the trip to Cincinnati. Cincinnati ain't too far from Louisville, so I'll drive down from Cincinnati to Louisville, kick it with some college friends, and keep pushing.
Get that Skyline chili and move the F on. But you're right, yeah. Maybe some bourbon. Yeah.
Louisville's a mid-city. So.
Mid-city. Yeah. Not a fan.
Nah. Like, the only thing fun about Louisville is the actual – if you go to the university. If you go to the university, great college town. City, whatever you want to call it, but like the actual city of Louisville, mid, boring, snooze, all that. Now maybe I'm jaded because I've lived in New York, Miami, and Houston, but mid, boring. Every time I go to Louisville, by the end of the day, I'm ready to go back home.
You're a big city guy. Hey, yeah, nothing wrong with that. Okay, after that, November 19th, the Texans are again favorites. 1.5 points against the Arizona Cardinals, who I think
That'd be terrible.
They might be the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
And I think with Kyler Murray likely out for most of this coming year, you don't know if they're going to try to force him back in at this point. I don't think there's really any incentive for the Cardinals to play Kyler Murray at all next season. And same for Kyler Murray. I feel like this is a game that the Texans would win too.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. I think if they're like, I don't know when Kyler's going to come back. Kyler doesn't come back by like October and they're like 1-whatever. They'll probably shut him down. And
yeah, I think so.
Because if they're going to get them on pit, they're going to draft Caleb Williams and then just try to probably move Kyler. Like, that just makes logical sense. Because like their cap, I did the math. That cap actually wouldn't be that crazy for them to move on. So I don't. So if they're not winning many games up until that point, there's no point in bringing back Kyler because you got to protect that asset because he'll have suitors for sure because there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to possibly need a quarterback in 2024.
Up next, Jacksonville Jaguars, a home game. Texans have done pretty well in this matchup over the years. And they did win the game in Jacksonville the year before. We talked about that game a little bit earlier on the schedule for the Houston Texans.
Right.
I'm not as sold on Jacksonville as a lot of people are.
Right.
I think at this point in the year, this should be when the Texans are playing at their best, assuming that D'Amico Ryans is a good head coach. I do think that there's a pretty good chance that based off of this preseason spread, which is the Jaguars a 4.5-point favorite, I think they could lose by 3, potentially win this one. That will be a really, I think, interesting yardstick game and one of those games that you take a look at and say, okay, if the Jaguars are supposedly the best team in the division, if the Texans get a late November win, you know, around Thanksgiving,
right?
Where does that go? I don't know, but I'm intrigued by that one. And I think they could make it actual cover in that game.
Who do we predict to win the first game?
I believe that we both picked the Jaguars. Then I also think
– I think they'll split.
Okay.
So if they won the first game, then I think they'll split in the second game. Because at that point, as you mentioned, like they'll be playing – Texas will be playing a lot better. They'll have a better they'll be more cohesive, more understanding what D'Amico wants. More understanding what Bobby Slug wants on offense, more understanding what Matt Burke wants on defense. So I'll probably go with a split. It's just hard to sweep opponents. It's just hard to sweep the divisional opponents.
Like, it's super 100%.
Like, that team has to be, like, dreadful for you to sweep.
Yeah. And even then, every now and then, I mean.
Because the Jags in 2021 knocked the Colts out of the playoffs, and they were, like, 2-5, right. 2-15. They're 2-14 at that point. And they had nothing to play for, and of course, they had everything to play for, and they dog walked them. So,
you did. Last one that we'll take a look at before we move on, the Denver Broncos home game. Denver, a 4-point favorite. I really wonder what Denver's going to be like this year. Yes, they have Sean Payton as the head coach. Offensive coordinator, I found out yesterday, was Joe Lombardi, which I was like, oh, they hired him. I thought that's the end of the world, but not exactly the best track record with the Justin Herbert, with Matthew Stafford. And now we're talking about a quarterback who loves to throw the football down the field and Russell Wilson working with a guy who wants to get the ball out quickly. I wonder. I don't know if this is the best fit. Again, it's going to be more of a Sean Payton show than it's going to be a Joe Lombardi show. But I think it is possible. I think there is a world where Russell Wilson is perhaps the backup at that point in the year. I don't think it's likely, but – as somebody who watched Russell Wilson a lot of last season and saw signs in Seattle while I was up there that this ain't the same guy, there is a world where maybe this is Sean Payton and the Broncos, new ownership, pressing the eject button on him. It's December. And again, who knows? But late in the year, this could be an interesting matchup for the Texans that's advantageous for them, depending on what the Broncos, how they feel about Russell Wilson, who's in another new offense.
Yeah. Or they could be in a, it could be in a wild card race. I think Sean Payton's a pretty good offensive coach, pretty good coach. The defense still has the majority of pieces you need to be successful. So I could see that, but I would lean towards my view than him being a backup. That's a lot of because they wouldn't be able to get a trade partner with Russ. They'll basically have to cut him. Because, like, if he had back-to-back, you know, bad years, like, who's trading for him?
It's a great point. But I think the sense that I've gotten is that Payton is running the show here. And last year,
Russ was running the show.
He was until they were like, oh, God, we're letting him run the show. And it felt like that was midway through the year. Also realizing that Nathaniel Hackett was just doing everything it seemed like he could to make Russell Wilson happy. Just not a good year. And I feel bad for Nathaniel Hackett. That's a guy that probably should never have been put into a head coaching role just based off the way last year went for him.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, well, there we go. We'll have 5 more games to go to and more Houston Texans conversations on the next episode of the Talkin' Texans podcast. So make sure that you subscribe to the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. You can catch DJ's work for ESPN.com. He is DJ Bienname. I am Paul Gallant. You can hear me 10 to noon weekdays on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So long, farewell. We'll be back at it next week.